Welcome back to Joe Paterno in his own words. Today's show, as always, being brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and online at purdyinsurance.com. And also, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In our opening segment, Joe Paterno talked about his days growing up in Brooklyn, going to Brooklyn Prep, eventually going to Brown, and then what brought him to Penn State, and, of course, the conversation he had to have with his parents once he made the decision to not become a lawyer and become a football coach. Joe Paterno's career as an assistant coach was going along very well. Then he received some critical advice from somebody that he always respected, assistant coach Jim O'Hara.
I lived with Jim O'Hara 11 years, and I had my room, and the kids were growing up, and it was great. I had access to the refrigerator, and Betts, with his wife, would feed me and all of it. Came to me one day, and he said, Joe, he said, you know, my father came over from Ireland. I can still see him. And he said, he came over from Ireland, and my cousins would come over. His father was a coal miner up in the Hardcore region, up in the Scranton area. He said, my cousins would come over, and they need a place to stay, and my father would put them up, and they'd put Sean up for 3 months, and Jonathan for 3 months, and he'd say, after they had 3-4 months, he'd say, Sean, you've been with us long enough. Now go out and find yourself a lassie and get married. He said, Joe, you've been with us 11 years.
So, at that point, Joe Paterno moved out. He found himself an apartment on Bullsburg Pike. And eventually, he met a co-ed. The co-ed was named Susan Poland. They struck up a friendship at the library.
If I hadn't stayed here, I wouldn't have met Sue. I mean, nobody in the world has a better wife than I do. I mean, no institution's ever had a better woman to work for them. She raises money for the library. She's, as I said, she's cooked some of the guys. She's cooked. We fed over 7,500 people in my house after a game. And she cooked every one of those meals. No, nobody catered her. My girls, waited on people. My daughter-in-laws waited on people. My sons have set up tables over. I wouldn't have met her, and I wouldn't have had. I have 5 kids. They all went to Penn State. I've got about. When you talk about trying to make it have an impact, I've tried to make Penn State the best place I could make it.
For Joe Paterno, as an assistant coach, he developed a great reputation. In fact, in 1964, Yale approached Joe Paterno about becoming their head football coach. He decided to turn it down. Then in 1965, Rip Engel made it official. At the end of 1965, he was going to step down as the head football coach at Penn State. Joe Paterno then was offered the job.
I got my job. Called me in after Rip said he was going to retire. Rip comes in and he says, I'm going to retire. I think they're going to hire you. He says, Ernie McCoy wants to talk to you. Ernie was the athletic director and dean of phys ed school. And he comes over to me and he says, do you want the job? I said, yeah, okay, it's yours. I said, what do I get paid? He said, $20,000. That's what I got paid, $20,000.
So what did he do with the $20,000? Well, he went out and started coaching football. His first of 409 wins would be against Maryland. Penn State used 3 safeties to beat the Terrapins that day. Lou Saban, who had been the head coach of the Buffalo Bills before that, was the head coach at Maryland. When the game was over, Joe ran across the field. He always wondered, what did the head coaches say after a win like this or a loss? He looked around. There was no Lou Saban. Lou Saban called him on Monday. He said, Joe, I want to apologize. I really want to apologize. He said, I know I should have run across the field, shook your hand, said something to you. He says, but you know what? We were both so lousy, I didn't really know what to tell you. Well, that was win number one. Joe Paterno's first season was 5-5, like Rip Engel's last season in 1965. Then Penn State's second season started with a loss to Navy. 11 games into his career, Joe Paterno had a 5-6 record as a head coach, and then he made a critical decision before a Friday night game in the Orange Bowl against Miami. He started a group of sophomores he personally recruited. They won that night. and would then trigger a streak eventually that would get to 31 straight games without a loss. Penn State would go on to win back-to-back Orange Bowls over Kansas and Missouri. Against Kansas, 12 men on the field by Kansas allowed the Nittany Lions to get a second crack at a two-point conversion that Bob Campbell scored on. Against Missouri, the Penn State defense had a phenomenal night with 7 interceptions and beat high-powered Missouri 10-3. Despite the great success, though, Joe Paterno was not offered a raise. He was still making that $20,000 a year. And then, out of nowhere, he got a call from Billy Sullivan and the New England Patriots.
You know, I never got a raise. I mean, I never went to get a raise. 1971, when the Patriots decided that they would like to get me to go up there, and I turned down a $1 million deal and a part of the club. All right? Every year I was going to coach, I was going to get a certain percentage of the Patriots. And I turned it down, and then a guy by the name of Bob Patterson, who was the vice president in charge of business operations, called me up and says, "We're going to Pittsburgh. We're going to see a guy by the name of Queenan, who was with Kirkpatrick, that big law firm out there that Thornberger was." I said, "What are we going for?" He said, "We're going to put together a contract." I never had a contract. Never had a contract. So we went out there, and Queenan had just negotiated Bradshaw's contract for him. And Queenan's a great guy. And we went in, and he and Patterson and I sat down, and he said, "Well, what do you want?" I said, "This isn't my idea. I didn't come out here. Patterson wants to come out here. They want to get me committed to something." He said, "Well, what are the parameters?" I said, "Look, why don't you guys just talk?" He said, "Well, go on, get lunch." And I said, "Okay." I went out, came back in about an hour, and he said, "Okay, we got a contract." I said, "Good, what do I sign?" He said, "No, you better have your lawyer look at it." I said, "I don't need to have a lawyer look at it." I said, "I don't have a lawyer."
He got the raise and moved on from there. Eventually, his next major raise was when Jackie Sherrill ended up getting the Texas A&M job. Why? Because Texas A&M originally had offered that job to Bo Schembechler. Bo Schembechler turned it down. Steve Garvin at the time went to Joe, and he said, "Are we paying you enough money?" And Joe said, "Geez, I don't know." So Joe looked at him. He said, "Why don't you call Don Canham, the athletic director at Michigan?" He said, "Why don't you find out what Bo Schembechler's making at Michigan?" He says, "We're relatively close in terms of age and how long we've been there." He said, "I've been coaching here since 66. Bo's been at Michigan since 69. Well, it turned out to be a pretty wise move on Joe's part because they get a $25,000 year raise once they found out what Bo was making at Michigan. 1973 was a great year for Penn State. The Nittany Lions became the first team ever to go 12-0. But there was frustration. I think as every Penn State fan knows by now, the Nittany Lions went 1968 perfect and finished second, went through 1969 perfect and finished second. But the incredible frustration was what happened in 1973. 12-0, they didn't finish second. They finished fifth in the nation. Fifth. That was the year of the great Sugar Bowl game between Notre Dame and Alabama. Notre Dame eventually won it 24-23 with Tom Clements at quarterback. Notre Dame finished 1, Alabama 2, 12-0 Penn State finished number 5. Penn State beat LSU that year in the Orange Bowl. But Penn State in 1973 did have a Heisman Trophy winner. And what happened after that was magical. It turned out to be that John Cappelletti gave a speech for the ages at the Waldorf Astoria when he dedicated the award to his dying brother, Joey.
I think a lot of people think that I go through a lot on Saturdays and during the week, as most athletes do. You get your bumps and bruises, and it's a terrific battle out there in the field. But only for me, it's on Saturdays, and it's only in the fall. For Joseph, it's all year round, and it's a battle that's unending with him, and he puts up with much more than I'll ever put up. And I think that this trophy is more of his than it is mine, because he's been a great inspiration to me.
It was a speech for the ages. No speech has ever been duplicated at the Waldorf Astoria than the one made by John Cappelletti that night. Joe Paterno was there and was mesmerized by it.
Never know what was going to happen. Yeah, and John got up, and I knew he started to struggle. And Jerry Ford was the vice president at that time. And I went over and I put my arm around, you know, just take, hang in there. You know, there's only so much emotion you can show, and there's just so much that you can feel. And I don't know whether I could have felt any more. I really don't. I mean, the kid, he sat there, Joey sat there with his eyes open, didn't even know what was going on. And here's this great big guy, you know, he's got tears coming down his eyes. And John starts talking. And all of a sudden, you know, they realize what he's saying. You couldn't hear a pin drop in that room. I mean, absolutely, you know, you'd have to be there. You know, to understand, it was just an amazing, amazing event.
An amazing, amazing event.